Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate that you listen to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe and also leave us some feedback. Rate us. Give us a review. Thanks for listening. Hope you enjoy.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
John Canzano. Raw. Sourced. Fresh. From the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, built by high-caliber millwrights, this is The Bald-Faced Truth.
We all watch the excellence of the Southeastern Conference, and I have long wanted to get Greg Sankey, the SEC commissioner, on this show, just to pick his brain, see how he does business, talk with him. He joins us now. How are you, sir?
I'm well, thank you. I'm in Greenville, South Carolina, where a women's basketball tournament's being played. So this is literally about as long a distance call as you'll have today, I think.
I love that. Have you ever been to Portland?
Oh, yeah, a number of times. I've been there for some meetings, been there for some recreation, attended a writer's conference there one time. It was really enjoyable and became familiar with, if my memory serves, Powell's books.
Yeah.
Yeah, walked. I've enjoyed walking downtown. NCAA tournament game there a few years back as well. So, number of visits.
What are you reading right now? Because I know that you like to write, you like to read. What's on your nightstand?
Yeah, well, I'm reading a book by Daniel Pink that's about timing. Interestingly, I just kind of picked it up, and it's called "When: The Scientific Secrets of Perfect Timing." And about halfway through, and it's a discussion about when to do things, how to decide when to do things, whether it's in your day or maybe over a lifetime. I previously finished a book by a guy that started a water charity. It was like 300-plus pages long, and I read it in like 3 days because his life was fascinating. And it's called Charity Water is the name of the organization. And, he'd been a club promoter in New York and ends up drilling water wells in Africa later in life.
I love that. And, you know, I think you can always keep learning, and it's obvious that you're striving for that. Have you ever thought about, you know, when you're done, will you write a book about your time as commissioner of that conference?
You know, there's a lot of things people would be interested to read. we tend in our work to keep those close to home. If at some point in my life, I'd love to take on the challenge of writing a book. The job itself is a challenge. I've run 41 marathons in my lifetime. Each of those was a challenge. So that word challenge means a lot to me. And I've had it on my mind. I don't know what form it might take. And hopefully it's not anytime soon.
You're born in Auburn, New York. At what point in your life did you say sports is what I want to be around?
You know, that's a great question. And I point to an experience. Really two. One, when I was 11 years old, Syracuse made a run to the Final Four. It was in San Diego in 75. It was John Wooden's last Final Four. And I can remember as a child, you know, it was on the radio. There was no Big East Conference. Oh, not every game in the NCAA tournament was televised. And I ended up winning in a neat desk contest at my school. They Call Me Coach, which was John Wooden's biography, right at that same time. It's the only time I've ever won an award for a clean desk, by the way. But reading that story just made an impression upon me. Not that it was necessarily a perfect life, but it was a life well lived. Loyalty to his work and to his family and to his wife and to his faith. And then fast forward, I was playing college baseball. I was a backup catcher. And I didn't get to play when I thought I should. And I just kind of shut down. And my college coach ends up in my dorm. The next day, knocks on my door on a Sunday night and has a very candid conversation with me. It was probably the greatest leadership lesson of my life. And he said, Sank, you have no idea how important you are to this team. And, you know, John, I was a freshman backup catcher. I'm like, what do you mean? He says, I would have blamed you had we lost that game yesterday. I'm like, Coach, I wasn't going to play, and I didn't play. And he said, yeah, but you make a difference. And he started to explain how. And it was probably the first time where I really understood what leadership meant. I was in this educational and sports context. And shortly thereafter, I'd been an electrical engineering student, but made a decision that I wanted to invest myself in education and in working with people in an educational setting. And it's developed into something that's a pretty special experience from a personal perspective.
Our guest, Greg Sankey, the SEC commissioner. It's really interesting that that coach sort of gave you that leadership lesson, and it's probably something that you carry today. Do you find yourself having those conversations with staffers at the department and on the campus level?
I do, and even with students. So yesterday I spoke to a graduate class via Skype at the University of North Carolina, for example, and I'll walk through my career, and a piece of the story relates to that. I was at the University of South Carolina, an actual SEC member of the grad class a few weeks beforehand. Same kind of message. I also spend a lot of time talking about priorities and principles in life. I was a commissioner of the Southland Conference a long time ago, which is a much lower profile relative to what I do now. But I ended up spending the night in the hospital because I wasn't caring for myself, exercising, eating right. I was 32 years old and had an atrial fibrillation. And that really informed a journey. It was about 5 years to figure out, well, who are you going to be? How are you going to live? Not like I was in a midlife crisis, John, but the thought process. And then how do you make decisions in life? And so part of the message is born out of that experience with the baseball coach, which was this leadership moment that then fed into, in my life, how will I make decisions? And, you're not going to make every decision in a perfect way, but certainly can apply some principles that help inform better decision making, which really is the key to life.
People always talk about leadership and integrity, and you've got sort of the underlying task, or maybe it's not underlining, maybe it's very overt, that integrity of the conference, integrity of the competition, the campuses, is paramount as a commissioner. How do you foster that as with leadership?
I think you have to be true to your values and what will happen, and it happens to me. So you could go on my Twitter feed. I'm the only one of the five autonomy conference commissioners brave enough to maintain a Twitter account. Somebody tweets at me, I don't read them all, that I'm the most corrupt commissioner in college sports. You're like, really? Like, I don't even know what that means. So it's born a bit out of some of the learning from John Wooden, which is, character is who you are, and reputation is who people say you are. And you have to be careful about your character, knowing it won't be perfect, but then resist the urge to jump into this discussion about who people think I am. Yet in interpersonal moments, I think that's when you can have conversations. It's easy to take, to make critical remarks like my social media account about someone you don't know, that you've never had to engage, that you've never had a conversation with. I think it becomes much harder after personal experiences to sit and make those same types of judgments.
SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey is with us. We have seen realignment in college football. We've seen the Power Five conferences and the playoff sort of emerge as in this modern era. What do you think the future holds for college athletics in general, as sort of the haves and the have-nots are separating or figuring out what direction to go?
That's where my experience, in a way, having been in that different competitive economic setting, is something that shapes me still to this day. So when I spoke yesterday to this grad class, I said, can you name me the members of the Southland Conference? And they went like, Ofer. Usually you'll get something. The Big Sky was a colleague conference. And I respect the reality of those situations. I understand why they are a part of Division One. Yet I have a very different responsibility now. I have responsibility to institutions. I work with media partners in a different way. I'm a fan of the big tent model with a TENT on the end, because I think that serves the educational purpose. It serves people. But you're right to observe that world has changed over the last 30 or 40 years. That doesn't really change my focus now, but there's a continuing sensitivity that I do think we want to have a Portland State still involved in college football, because I think that provides opportunity. And I think those opportunities, be it football or basketball, are fundamental to what we do. And that's why I still believe there's a bright future in intercollegiate athletics.
Greg Sankey, SEC commissioner, is with us. You've got a reputation of being very collaborative. You speak with the ADs and presidents in your conference. Why is that important to you?
Well, I do dictate from time to time. You know, it's probably for me, it started with being 31 years old and leading a conference, which is a pretty young age, and understanding that everyone in that room had been through a lot more than I, had a lot more years of experience. And that probably shaped my style. And there are times when I look at it and you have to be dictatorial. You have to have an edge. You have to say, this is the way it's going to be. And at the same time, you're going to have to draw people in continuously. And I'll say, John, you know, I was talking with the president today about a decision we made like 5 years ago prior to my time as commissioner. And we have like 4 of 14 presidents or chancellors who have turned over in that time. And one of our strategic priorities internally is to continue to build a culture of collegiality and collaboration across our entire league, despite the intense competitive environment. And you can read where, you know, we bump up against maybe not meeting that goal from time to time, but hopefully that plays out across our league more often than not. But, you know, we're not going to be perfect in those collaborative issues either.
You're listening to Greg Sankey, the SEC commissioner. You guys have done a really nice job in basketball with non-conference scheduling and sort of elevating the conference as a whole. How intentional was that scheduling?
Very, and it emerged over time. And you have to go back. This year we had Tennessee and Kentucky in a top five matchup a few weeks ago. You have to go back 15 years ago to find two SEC teams, both ranked in the top five, playing a men's basketball game. So we had a really long space where we weren't meeting our own expectations. And what I mean by that is, you know, we've got 11 of the top 25 in men's basketball. You know, if we had 2 years where every one of our softball teams is selected in the NCAA tournament, yet my first year as commissioner, we had three men's basketball teams, one of those playing in the first round in Dayton. My predecessor did a great job setting the stage for engaging the non-conference scheduling dialogue, but it was a kind of a check with us system as opposed to an objective standard. And after that three-team selection experience, which had happened in preceding years as well, because we kind of bounced between three and five, my observation was we need an objective standard set on some set of metrics that you hit in advance. So as you're trying to schedule, you can pick, you know, this team that might not be really successful and, you know, balance it against a highly ranked team over time. What's great is our men's basketball coaches had turned over a little bit. Those that were here bought in, those that were new bought in. And that's a new model among the coaching community. But I think they saw the need. So I really give them the credit for being open to a new approach. And Mike Slive started that conversation. And 3 years ago, we advanced it with a different advance approach with some specific targets. We started kind of at point A and then elevated that to an even higher threshold.
Tell us about your parents. What did mom and dad do?
Yeah, I just talked to my mom today, and they were involved in a really serious car wreck in the fall. So they live in upstate New York, is still where it's about 12 degrees, I think.
Wow.
My dad's a welder. I've got one brother. He lives in Hawaii, just outside Honolulu. He's a school teacher. So I'm the least interesting of their children, actually. My mom worked a bunch of different jobs. She got her college degree in her 40s. So my dad's a pipe fitter. He's a welder, union welder, still works. He's in his mid-70s. And when they had the car accident, the first question was to the doctor, can I go back to work? And my mom got her degree in history in her mid-40s, as I said, and operates a business of estate sales, house sales, appraisal around antiques. And she swims in the lake when it's not frozen in open water. And My dad bought his Harley when he was 65, so it's cool that they're still active.
They have to be insanely proud that their kid has gone on to run, you know, the best conference in the country. And what do you think you got from dad? What'd you get from mom that you use today?
In my press conference when I was announced 4 years ago as the eighth commissioner, they were there, and I did not tell them this was happening. So that they were stunned. They were trying to figure it all out. When they attended our first football championship game, and I was the commissioner, and they got to go like down on the sidelines, and then they saw kind of this TV thing, and they met Paul Feinbaum. I think that was the moment they realized I was kind of a big deal when they met Paul, because you radio guys are, you know, the big deal. My mom is like the most energetic person I know, and so I think that energy is genetic. So hopefully some of that's passed down. And my dad's work ethic. You know, I worked a couple summers in the pipe fitting trade in an apprentice type role, one of which was in building a nuclear plant, believe it or not. It's still running. So I did okay. But, you know, you're up at five, you're working, you know, full 10 or 12 hour shifts, 6 days a week, and you make good money. But my grades improved significantly after those experiences. And I think that work ethic that I observed, my brother as well observed throughout our entire lives, is a learned behavior that still benefits me to this day. And, you know, candidly, my dad had a really battle with alcohol. And my parents had come from different backgrounds, and they had some agreements on how they'd raise their children. My dad, you know, overcame that alcohol problem. My family solidified when I was about 4 or 5 years old, and that has made a huge difference in my upward trajectory throughout my young and later life.
You mentioned Feinbaum. You know, what role does he serve sort of in that community, in that conference?
Oh, that's a good question. He occasionally gives me an agenda item to address at a at a network content committee meeting. It's an outlet. It's a conversation that stays fresh every day. You know, it's a bit of a brave situation because our colleague conference networks don't have those settings. And, you know, it's one that's available, whether it's you're driving along listening on the radio, be it satellite radio, or maybe a local radio broadcast. And then there's a person associated. And I hope, and I think the network's been good for Paul, and Paul's been good for the SEC network. He's out on our game day type SEC Nation set. He'll be at our basketball tournament. So there's more of a person associated with this show. And I think that's helped as well make it a relevant and continuing developing conversation with our fan base. And candidly, you know, there are people calling in from coast to coast every day. So it's beyond just our normal 11-state footprint to reach out to the fan base across the country with that relevance around the Southeastern Conference.
SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey with us. Recent news, Pac-12 and SEC Bowl Alliance, Las Vegas Bowl. A lot of people want to know what level of team we might expect to see from the SEC participating there.
Yeah, that's the great mystery, is it not? So I think without confirming or denying, I've seen those media reports, and we'll see where that destination might bring us. We, you know, John, have historically only played bowl games within our geographic footprint. So this idea is one that's different for us, and we'll see if we can bring that to the finish line and who they might involve. That's an articulate dance for you.
Yeah, but I think, too, that, you know, there are a lot of conferences that are going to want to play games with SEC schools, and they're going to want to play you not within that footprint because they say, hey, it's a heck of a place to go try to play and win a football game or a basketball game. How do you defend against maybe getting too far out over your skis and getting in some situations, but also, you know, you want to play those games. You want to demonstrate, hey, that's the strength of your conference. So how do you manage that?
You know, one of the things that's real is we've not had a regular postseason interaction with the Pac-12 that happened in the Peach Bowl with Washington a few years ago. We've had it during the season. I was out for the A&M UCLA game a couple of years ago. And so I think there's been an interest in expanding those relationships. Yet I think to the fundamentals of the question, there's a resonance around competing against the Southeastern Conference. We've had this great success in football. We're not the only test, if you will, out there. But I think the brand and the names of our universities and the level at which they've played have attracted that playing interest, be it in the season or even in the postseason, which, to your earlier question, I think that's part of what's healthy now and in the future of football. We also have to be attentive to our own expectations and needs and how we structure our regular season schedule, and people have opined about that. Yet I think the whole of our construct works really well, at least from the SEC perspective. And I candidly think it's still been good for college football.
In your role, you're going to deal with crisis management. You're going to have investigations. There's going to be sanctions. There are going to be things that happened. It's just it's part of the gig. How do you manage those crises from, you know, and keep them from becoming much larger than they are? What can you add? And I know people across industries will be listening to this with great curiosity.
Well, I don't think you always have ultimate control. I have found that I'm responsible less for more what I do and more for what other people do. And so when you're in those moments, you know, I had a hurricane situation in 2016. One game we got played on a Sunday rather than a Saturday. The next one was enormously painful and lingered. And, you know, I take a step back from that and, you know, look at my own work in that particular crisis, some of which I could control and did well. Others, I think about how do I adapt? And then I talk to others involved about how they adapt. You know, how do we communicate becomes a critically important part. And we've sought outside counsel for how we communicate in a new environment. And candidly, and I've shared this publicly, how do we communicate around officiating in a modern society? You know, this is not specific, John, to just the crisis issues, but I think it's a reality issue that the world around our officiating has changed. There's more information available, whether it's through searches on the internet or just from watching a game on a DVR, and then forming opinions and sharing those with millions of people instantaneously. And so it demands an adaptation. And I think back to your crisis management question, fundamentally each of these situations is unique. You want to be as open and honest. You may not be able to share everything, but you've lost a bit of control when the definition of crisis occurs, and you're then trying to manage back. And you do that based on a set of circumstances that may be dictated to you rather than those that you create.
I was comparing 990s of all the conferences, and the fiscal year that I was looking at had the rent of the SEC offices at about $300,000. I now know that was due to some renovations. What is the annual, normal, usual rent that the conference is paying there in Birmingham?
Yeah, to the credit of the sixth commissioner, and our office has been in Birmingham, just to give you the history, since 1948, Roy Kramer negotiated a deal for basically $1 a year in downtown Birmingham. And we had some locations, as I understand our history, that were interested. And if you go back to the late 40s, John, if you want the SEC history lesson, I think it was Atlanta, Nashville, and Birmingham were interested. And Birmingham was a neutral city, which I have fans in my footprint who would laugh at that notion, given that we're about an hour away from Tuscaloosa and 2 hours from Auburn. But Georgia Tech was in the league, and so Atlanta was not a neutral city, and Vanderbilt was not a neutral city. And it's worked. It makes travel for our staff a little bit. Spend a lot of time in the Atlanta airport making connections. How about that one for you? But it's a pretty good deal.
That's a great deal. When I go out and talk to kids at high school level or college level, they sometimes ask me, how do I get your job? And I have to go back through how I ended up in the roles that I ended up in. How do you answer that question? If a kid comes up to you and says, Mr. Sankey, how do I become commissioner of a conference like the SEC one day?
Well, there's a couple answers. So probably much like you is how I answer a big picture. The first thing I say is, look, if I could answer that question in a defined way, I wouldn't tell you. I'd write a book to your earlier question. I'd charge you $29.95, and then every 3 months I'd run a seminar in a different part of the country and charge people $1,000 because I've seen that business model. You know, what I say when I'm asked that in a setting is, you see me now, and I'm in a suit and tie, and wow, he's the commissioner of the Southeastern Conference. But you don't see me when I was a $500 a month intern before taxes at Northwestern State University in Natchitoches, Louisiana. You don't see me when I've been married 8 months and said to my wife, hey, what do you think about this adventure? And we both left upstate New York and lived in Louisiana without air conditioning in our car in the middle of summer, which I don't recommend. And then, you know, you don't see me when I had to make some decisions to say no to jobs, to miss some events around my children because they were, you know, I had to be at some events or meetings, and I tried to balance that based on those principles I talked about earlier. What you see is it works. And the great thing in life is you have these opportunities and you do the greatest work possible. You build relationships and you make the best decisions. And I think I would have been successful had I gone a different direction. You know, my horizon as a child was about a 3-hour drive from Syracuse, New York, so Albany to Buffalo and down to the Pennsylvania border. And I was going to teach and coach. That was it. And I had these other opportunities based not on money, but based on learning and growing as a person, and boom, you know, I'm here. And that's the answer that maybe someday will be part of that book.
Greg Sankey, let us know when you're in Portland next. I'll buy you a cup of coffee. I appreciate you coming on and giving us so much of your time.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate the conversation and look forward to some great basketball despite some of the other news out there. It'll be an exciting few weeks for all of college basketball, I'm convinced.
Thank you, sir. Greg Sankey, SEC commissioner, joining us there from South Carolina. I have so many takeaways. I'll share my three takeaways. I made notes on this. The three things that I think we really need to focus on, what we heard from the SEC commissioner, plus the 2 at 2 coming up, Punch It Audio, so much more.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.